Hey there, listeners. Welcome to the Leadership is Changing podcast. My name is Dennis Giannoutsis and I'm your host. I had a great interview with a gentleman by the name of Luke Getting. Now, Luke is an award-winning communications expert and the founder of Puffingston Presentations. So he's, in other words, a creative consultancy, and he specializes in crafting engaging experiences for employees and audiences around the world. Now, Luke and I talked about various things, and one we talked about was around leaders presenting and how they come across to audiences and what they need to do to become an effective communicator. We talked about change the world by using amazing communication, communicating really well that can actually inspire others indeed. And we also talked about connecting with authenticity. Hey, listeners, sit back and enjoy.
Welcome to Leadership is Changing. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change. This is taking your leadership to another level by finding the balance between executive excellence and personal well-being through stories that inspire real change. It's time to adapt in our fast-moving world when leadership is changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsis.
Hey there, listeners. Welcome to another wonderful episode of the Leadership is Changing podcast. Great to have you here with us. I've got a great guest with me today. His name is Luke Getting. Luke, a massive welcome to you.
I appreciate it. I'm excited to get into some conversation about leadership.
Excellent. Now, whereabouts in the world are you today?
I am beaming in from Austin, Texas, and we're thrilled to be welcoming so many visitors from around the world right now. This is the time of the year we host the South by Southwest conference, which is a very popular one in tech and in the startup space. So yeah, I'll be jumping over to a startup crawl after this, kind of a mix of startups meets pub crawl, trade show meets pub crawl kind of event. Pretty fun.
Yep. And is it actually just in Austin?
The event?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
pretty much over the whole downtown, and I don't know if you can get a hotel within 45 miles.
Wow. And if you do get a hotel, it's probably very expensive this week or whatever. Yeah. Crazy.
Correct.
Yeah. And the Texas State Fair, I think that's normally in Dallas. Is that right?
That is in Dallas. It is the largest in the United States. I've been there 3 or 4 times, and I still find random pockets that I like, huge ground areas that I've never seen before as I'm wandering around. But the key is, if anyone is planning on attending, reach out to me. We did find the one place in the whole fair that has $4 beers. So let me know. I can hook you up with that information, but we got to keep it on the down low a little bit.
Yeah. listeners, just quietly ask that question. We're not going to let anyone know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I've been to the state fair once myself. I happened to be there and I got to experience corn dogs and a whole lot of other stuff, and it was a wonderful experience. So listeners, if you are going to go to the States, or if you are in the States but you've never been to the Texas State Fair, highly recommend it. And check out what Luke's saying as well. There's a great place to go. Now, Luke, what I'd love you to do is to tell us more about you and your background.
Of course. So I feel like my career has been pretty much defined in the broad category of communication. My first role out of college, out of uni, was in outside sales. And so I was pretty immediately just thrown out into the world. I was based in northern United States in Minnesota at the time. And I was traveling all over the Midwest, giving presentations to our network of partners and updating them on our product line. And I pretty quickly realized that my presentation and oftentimes my visual aids, those were the most important things to me being successful in my career. And like a lot of people, our corporate overview deck was handed down from the leadership team, a typical run-of-the-mill type of PowerPoint. And I started experimenting. I started strategizing with different ways I could get the message across, primarily looking at how can I make these experiences much more interactive? I felt like sometimes I would show up to meetings and I would just present and talk at these people for the full hour. And when I thought about how did that meeting go, I couldn't even really tell myself because it was just me talking. Like I had very little input. And so I quickly tried to start reframing what that interaction could look like. And I continued to play around with that for 3 or 4 years. I eventually got so interested in this medium of communications and presentation. And I also found a tool, Prezi. Did you ever use Prezi? Do you remember that as like a cloud-based presentation tool?
I do remember it, but I never used it.
Okay. One of the things I really like, I do have to give them a shout out. One of the things I loved about that tool was it was very dynamic at spatial movement. So you could zoom in and zoom out. And I felt like it was really valuable in being able to demonstrate concepts from a big picture perspective and then zooming in on the details. So all that to say, I started using Prezi. I eventually quit my sales job, started consulting back to the industry that I'd come from. That never really took off. But one of the presentations I've been using to pitch my services ended up winning the Best Business Prezi of the Year award.
Whoa.
And so that was really exciting. And from there, I started getting a lot of attention. I eventually became certified as a Prezi expert in partnership with their organization. And so by accident, I became a presentation expert and eventually had a presentation agency called Puffington Presentations. And so for the last 10 plus years, we have worked with executives and sales teams and marketing teams to create high impact keynotes and high impact sales presentations and corporate templates that are distributed to tens of thousands of employees around the country. And as a last little addition, of the last 6-ish months or so, I have decided, you know what? I need to get out from behind the scenes a little bit, and I'm a little tired of sometimes my clients don't always take me up on the ideas that I have. So I'm going to get out there and start speaking myself. And so maybe that was partially just the excitement of being able to have these in-person events again after the pandemic. But I have been professionally speaking for the last 6 months. I have a keynote called Engagement Unleashed, the Gen Z Opportunity. And it's all about how managers and leaders can better connect with this new emerging workforce, Gen Z, and how we have to adapt and essentially evolve with the new generation that's entering the workforce. So I'll probably frame a lot of my responses today on leadership in a bit of that context, because I think it's so critical that we don't just look at business processes and employee engagement as something that's been solved and something that's we have our systems and they're never going to need to change. I think it very much is an evolution that plays a critical role in leadership.
Yeah. Well, and there was two reasons why I brought you onto today's show or the episode, right? Because when I did some research on you and looking at you, and I thought to myself, okay, so there's a couple of things here. One is there's a lot of leaders out there today that present and they are just the talking head up front. And I'm like, that is so boring. That is not even connecting with the audience. It's not even relevant. It's just so dumb. And they look really nervous and incompetent. And then on the other side was about you also doing the presentation side, but also helping others. But it's about how do we maybe use technology today, or how do we actually do things? Because one question I've got for you right up front is, when you are pulling together a presentation, can we get too fancy with some of the technology stuff? Is it a good thing to do or not?
It's a great question. And I think there's a lot of nuance to my response, but I'll try to keep it crisp here. When it comes to technology, I feel like ultimately we have to take a very close look on how our use of technology is servicing our audience. Front and center, really arguably the only thing we should be asking when we're evaluating the use of these tools. And so in some cases, I'll pick on one of my favorites. I actually use it quite extensively, so I'm very much a believer. Audience participation tools. They started showing up increasingly like 5-10 years ago. You know what I'm talking about? Like the Slidos and Mentimeters and things like that, and mm-hmm. event apps. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like they got popular. Then they disappeared a little bit. Like they're South by Southwest, again, I said the major conference happening right now. They've had Slido as a partner for I think probably close to 10 years. But what I started seeing to your question is people would use them in essentially gimmicky ways. Hey, where's everyone coming from today? Oh, I'm from California. I'm from New Zealand. I'm from Australia. I'm from Ireland. Okay, cool. Here's my keynote. That didn't bring any value to the audience. It was gimmicky. It affected the content in no way whatsoever. So what I've been trying to do, both with my visual aids, if I am using a deck, and the audience participation tools, is I am actually trying to bring a very two-way experience to all of my talks. And ultimately, this is going to be my theme, preview of my theme, is like trying to just bring it to an organizational level. But to stay with the talk analogy for a little bit, so one thing I'm doing is I will present essentially a Netflix-style menu of content. And I'll give a good preview. I'll have a 10-15 minute introduction to these concepts. But after that, I throw it to my audience. I say, what is most important for you to discuss today? What's most weighing on your mind? I don't care. I could talk about any of these things for way longer than you want to listen to me. And so they will literally use a tool to vote. And based on their response, I will actually tailor my content. I have the modularity built in. I have the navigation built in. And real quick aside, it's pretty easy to do this, these things functionally. It's much more about the strategy behind it. And so, yeah, I will ask my audience. They will vote. And I know that typically if I'm giving an hour long presentation, I know that that 60 minutes is as optimized as possible for my audience's interests, no matter who shows up.
Yeah, and that's great. And it's good to be able to actually have that interaction, because otherwise it's just boring for people. And I think that's more about, that's important, right? I mean, it's not you on stage that's the key. It's the actual audience itself. And I think there are so many people out there, leaders today, who don't get that, who don't. And here's an example. When people go to do a presentation, they tend to go along with 50,000 slides, and each slide's got 50,000 words on it. And it's just like, it's really overpowering. So you think about, well, how much should I have, and so forth? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a great question. And again, I feel like in this one, we can just get very much back to the basics. You, in many ways, leaders, if you are presenting a lot of content on a slide, especially text-based content, in most cases, you are going to be literally competing for the audience's attention with your own slideshow. And I'll illustrate it to you right now. If you're listening to our podcast, try reading a book right now too. You can't do both. Your mind is literally having to choose between the two. You can't read and listen at the same time. They're being processed differently. And so that's, to me, there's the grand irony of actually competing with yourself when you do something like that. So I personally, I love this topic, and I've got to be careful that I don't get too worked up and go off on an hour on this. But people get so hung up on the idea of slide count. I think that idea is just, it's just preposterous. It's just a way to chop things up. Prezi, again, shout out to them. They thought much more of a presentation in the idea of frames, as in like zooming in and out, much more of a vision of cinematography like we see in movies and in shows. And so you might have a point that has a build of 6 or 7 elements to it, and maybe that's 10 slides. But if you're doing that one at a time very strategically, and maybe at the beginning you preview what that's going to look like, and at the end you recap what you just summarized, then you're showing the audience that big picture. Whether that comes down to 12 slides or you jam it all into one, in some cases is irrelevant. I'd actually argue the 12 is better than the one, because you're very strategically sharing these concepts with your audience in a way that they can consume it and follow along your logic versus simply dumping it on them, giving them, if your audience can't get the point and the thrust of your information on that slide in a second or two maximum, it's failing you. That slide is failing you.
Yep.
And that is almost always the case when you put up a chart, by the way. Let's not ask our audience to be data scientists in the moment on a slideshow that's faded because the projector is a little bit weird. Let's make our conclusions for them and then provide them handouts after the fact so they can deeper dive if they'd like to.
Yeah. The way I look at it as well, I love what you're saying there, because I think it is actually you doing an ankle tap is what you trip yourself up, or you're scoring an own goal when you actually talk what you're talking about. I think what's quite interesting is I say to people, some of that stuff can go to slides in the back. It's a backup slide, as I call it. And you can always refer to it if you need to. But the thing is, you should know your material so well. And that's the other thing. They don't prepare. They don't know the material very well. So my role is to bring it to life for the audience. And so I sometimes my slides just got one word, but the picture, there's that picture there, but the one word. And then I have a whole lot of stuff I will talk about it in relation to it. But that's the topic. That's all they need to know. And then we get into it. So yeah, you and I could talk hours on this, as you said.
Which... I could just one real quick on the picture. I just want to make one very quick point. The picture has so much communication in it. And we've seen those stats, many of us who spend time with presentations. But I think, like, just even extrapolating that further with TikTok, you can, in a 5-second video, you can get transformed into a world and experience all kinds of emotion because of how much gets communicated in an image or in a video, versus you can have hundreds, thousands of words on a slide and you're not going to get them there the same way a nice, high quality communicating image or video might.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? I didn't realize, I had an idea, but it wasn't until I started doing podcasts. 5 seconds is actually a long time. You can get a lot in within 5 seconds. But I think a lot of people go into meetings thinking, okay, I've got 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, and they want to try and cram everything into it to get their point across, rather than relaxing and going in there and just getting their points across, but doing it really well, that people go like, wow, I want to know more.
Right. And again, I would really emphasize to people, especially when you have less time, the more you can find out what your audience wants to get from that meeting, by far will you have the best outcomes. There's so many times where we waste an hour-long meeting, 45 minutes of our meeting, and stuff that they already knew or were trying to overcome objections that they didn't even have. And there's all these kind of typical ways of laying out a slide deck. Just ask them. And maybe the last slide or two, the last 5 minutes you had scheduled, maybe that's where they wanted to spend all their time. Let's find that out sooner than later.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you. Now, leadership. How did you get into leadership?
Accidentally. I won that Prezi Award. All of a sudden, I started getting clients reaching out to me from around the world who wanted me to help create high impact decks for them. And I was really blessed to be able to actually hire. I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades kind of person. And so when I was starting to actually hire real, quote unquote, real graphic designers, I was so thrilled. And to take some of the principles that I had established and best practices, and then start to apply their much superior talent to what we were trying to do, it was really, really powerful. And so, yeah, that, in speaking to leadership, Maria, that very granular startup style, is I had to go through that journey of, I used to do everything. And now I'm trying to communicate the principles and the best practices, but taking a step back and allowing them to run with it. And it was certainly a struggle, but by far and away, the outcomes started becoming much, much superior once I was able to really take that step back, allow them to add their ideas and insights. And then ultimately, really for me, you've now focused much more on the vision of what we were trying to do than the actual execution of it. That's a very pie in the sky, rosy depiction. But yeah, ultimately, I became a leader by my freelance business getting very successful. And starting to add team members and grow along the way.
Yeah. So when it was a little bit of a struggle to let go and things like that, what did you do to overcome that?
Part of it was necessity, in that I knew I couldn't be as involved in those projects as I used to be. But part of it, it was my realization, I couldn't also do this halfway. I think I handled it poorly initially, where I would bop in and out of projects and try and really just do way too much, like try to direct them at a very micro level. And so I felt like I was providing guidance, but really I was just throwing everything off. I wasn't perhaps even in some of these client stakeholder meetings where they got all the directives, but I thought I knew best. And so it ultimately came down to really learning to trust my team and learning to channel the way that I react to how these projects are performing, based on what our clients think, not on just what I think, because ultimately, if they're doing much, our clients are thrilled with the work they're doing, then my opinion is irrelevant in many of those cases. So that's something really I preach, trying to get to this idea of measuring output versus measuring input versus the kind of traditional ways of like, oh, that person's a hard worker because they're in the office from all day long and they're really hard at work. No, how's their work being received? How does their manager appreciate what they're doing? I think getting to this new world of, especially now that most of us or many of us are full-time in the office, getting to how can we measure output and success in a different way, I think is a really important element with leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. I like it. Some good points there. Now, this person could be a rival from history. Who's your favorite leader and why?
So I'm going to stay on the communications track, and I am, apologies, but I'm going to get a little political here, but I have to personally say Barack Obama, former U.S. president. And the reason he really jumps to mind for me is because he really changed the world by being an amazing communicator, by being an amazing individual who can inspire people. He became the nominee for the Democrats versus people who had a lot more robust resumes politically, but he had this ability to inspire people. I actually have a book here called Art for Obama, just all the kind of street art that emerged around his elections, the way that people were so excited. He won a Nobel Peace Prize. Again, I don't know that it was necessarily for his core. I mean, he did some great things, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it was just the inspiration he brought, not only to the United States, but the world. So yeah, his ability to communicate and to inspire is in turn inspiring to me.
Yeah, look, I agree. I used to sit there watching him speaking for hours just to see how he stood, how he said things. In fact, even how he did his tie. And I wanted to do my tie like him when I was wearing ties in those days and things like that. And yeah, you're so right. I think his ability to communicate very well, strong, whether you support him as a politician or not, doesn't matter. If you take that out of the picture, just think about the way that the guy communicates. And I love what you just said there about how he actually used the communication to actually change the world, but inspire people. And I think that's what leadership's about, people. That's what it's about. And I'd really like that you chose him, in fact, of that reason why, which is good. Have you actually met Barack Obama in person?
Not yet. No. Would love to. If he's listening, let's make it happen, Barack.
Yeah, he's bound to be listening.
Mr. Obama. He's bound President to be, Obama.
Yeah, yeah. If you two were sitting on a park bench having a cup of coffee, would there be a question that Luke would love to ask him?
There is. And whether this is a perfect metaphor for our conversations around business and leadership, I'm not sure yet. But I would be really curious, especially now that he's been a two-term president, he's seen everything that's happened since. I would be really curious his current present-day thoughts on how we can come together as a collective people, humanity, country, what his thoughts are on continuing to work on bringing people together in a way that his initial 2008 campaign did. Does he believe that's something that we can continue doing and growing and affecting positively in the future? I'm sure he does, but would love to get his thoughts on how that leadership has evolved, especially in the last very action-packed couple of decades since.
It has been action-packed, as you said, yeah. When you said before about, because I noticed that you actually used the word communicating rather than saying just speaking, because I think it could be just one-on-one, it could be in an email, it could be a text message, it could be even TikTok, as you said, or it could be even on stage in front of the TV cameras, wherever it is, it's just communicating. It's not just one thing as speaking. So a lot of leaders think that for them to be inspiring, they have to be very rah, rah, rah up the front, things like that. What are your thoughts on that? Do they have to be like that, or is it, can they be inspiring without being rah-rah?
I love that question. Thank you. So what immediately jumps out to me is the principle of authenticity. And earlier I mentioned that my talk is largely to leaders about connecting with Gen Z in the workforce. And so I'll use that lens to say, increasingly, as we have our workforce shaped by people who are essentially digital natives, they grew up with the internet. They grew up with internet-enabled devices at their fingertips. They have really grown to closely scrutinize who's being authentic and who is not. And I would say I would throw that right back to leadership. If you are a raw style person, terrific. But I don't think you necessarily have to be to still create really genuine, powerful leadership-esque connections with your team. So yeah, I think be authentic to who you actually are. It has probably the highest probability of you being successful in creating those connections with your employees. And if I could actually even just your preamble to that question about the methods of communication, I just absolutely want to underscore that. Again, this is increasingly our workforce is shaped by millennials and Gen Z who are very used to omni-channel communication styles, asynchronous communication styles. And so something like posting a 60-second video in your team's Slack channel or your team's Teams channel, that may be a much better way to start reaching people than anything that you could do at an all-hands style meeting, although I certainly encourage that as well. But looking at these different avenues, I believe, is really important. The corporate newsletter signed with a fancy quill pen and either mailed out or emailed out, I don't know that people are going to take the time to read those four paragraphs that your team worked endlessly on.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember sitting in Houston actually about 10 years ago with a senior leadership team, and the senior executive said in the room, look, I want to be able to communicate with the team more, but I don't want to always to do what we call town halls. And I know we should do like a newsletter email, but I just don't want it to be words. I just wish I could communicate better. And I went, well, why don't you do a 2-minute video or 3-minute video, smack it into the email if you want, or whatever you want to do then. Because at those days, it was like, oh, that's a pretty good technology. Do it something like that and bring it to life. Be you and be up front. And they went, wow, that's really good. Okay, great. Where would you like me to send the invoice? But it's all good. But I like what you say. It's about being a little bit smarter about what's available out there as a tool to be able to out there to go and do things that people are actually going to grasp it and get it. And
And I would actually propose this can all become now a continuation. So let's say you do have that all hands meeting, which I do believe there's a lot of value to it. Perhaps typically there's going to be a lot of questions submitted. Maybe you gather them beforehand. Maybe you gather them in the meeting with audience participation tools. Well, what if afterward you created a video answering the next three that maybe you didn't get to address and you share that in like, what a cool way to show people you're listening and you want them to know what this organization is trying to achieve. So yeah, making this not just a, we've carved out once every quarter for our leaders to descend from on high to answer your questions for 10, 15, 20 minutes, but much more making it an element where this is a ongoing conversation through various channels and methods. I think that has the best chance to get people to really feel like they're part of something that's beyond a paycheck.
Excellent. Well, the show is called Leadership is Changing. That's when I say that title or that statement, what does that mean for Luke?
I think this is a really interesting time in business history. And I know that's bold to say as a millennial who's not been around so long yet. But I feel like we have a business tradition that is largely based on generations, in many cases outside of the, like they've retired, they're gone from the workforce altogether at this point. Business traditions that have been around 100, 200 years in some cases, industrial revolution style business practices. And I think with one, the pandemic was a big catalyst for everything to take a look at. Does this all make sense? But also again, having these new generations who are digital natives, who are used to having a lot of flexibility and to really thinking much more about outputs versus these traditions of the 9 to 5, the 8 to 5. I think that is the top way that leadership is changing. So we've already alluded to it a bit where communication methods are going to have to change. I think it's really important to note that there is very little an organization can do at a fundamental level to just be so different from the marketplace that someone can't simply, with how easy it is to apply to new jobs and to have take a job from around the world, to have a podcast conversation with a gentleman on the other side of the world at a different day. There's very little one can do at an organization level to be so unique that someone just has to work for you because there just isn't another option like that.
Yep.
And so I think it really comes down to How are we inspiring people? How are we making them believe that we are bought into the mission? We are living our mission. We are living our values. And we are focused on creating a workplace that makes everyone successful, not just, hey, I need you to return to office because we as a C-suite decided that's what we want. Nothing to do with KPIs, nothing to do with performance. Y'all are crushing it at home. But we think it'd be better to work at the office. And I'm not even necessarily weighing in on the pros and cons of that policy, but I believe a lead with why spirit is the way forward. And this kind of traditional command structure, and I know you talk about servant leadership a lot, that I believe is very much the trend, in addition to evolving to continue to look at, do these processes make sense for these new generations in the emerging workforce? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very good. And my next question to you is about how do you become successful? How are you successful as a leader in a fast-changing world? But I think you've actually covered a lot of that already around the technology, the tools, the communicating well and inspiring. And I think we're all good in that one. If you and I were to change lenses now and start thinking about it from an employee's perspective now, looking through their lens, their expectations of leaders, has it changed? Maybe you've already covered this off as well.
Absolutely, it has changed. And I think you touched on it there, and I was alluding to it earlier, but I want to be careful of my remarks here, because I think sometimes this idea of really high touch management and high touch leadership feels like, oh, how could I possibly achieve that? Because I can't be thinking every day necessarily. I would propose, I'll just use a kind of traditional framework of, let's say a manager has a scheduled 1 hour one-on-one with a direct report. I think that's pretty typical. Once a week. And so I think this new style of communication, what teams expect from their leaders and from their managers, is much more about chopping up that hour into maybe 5 to 10 minute check-ins 5 to 10 times a week. And the reason I craft that literary metaphor that way is like, it doesn't actually have to necessarily be more time in one schedule. It's just a different style. It's a more high touch frequency. Again, the emerging workforce, when I say that, typically Gen Z and younger millennials, and increasingly Gen Alpha is around the corner, they are used to getting real-time feedback on digital devices. You input something, it pretty much immediately tells you right or wrong. You post something, within seconds, minutes, certainly days, you are getting feedback. People liked that. People disliked that. Here's an unlimited amount of commentary around that. And so even a weekly sync, that's not really enough. They're not used to that, to just float around in that ambiguity. And I do believe that's a big reason why there's a lot more reasons, but anxiety among the younger generations, that is something they're not as used to, is having these huge gaps of communication and not being able to build off of what's happening. Okay, I worked for a few weeks. We have a monthly sync in. And then there's even, I've gotten this feedback a lot from the emerging workforce, where there's this feeling of almost of manipulation, as in my manager's like withholding this feedback for my annual review in 3 months. Why not just tell me? We can address this. We can start moving forward and then being more productive. And you would think that would be a win. So that's an example of what I mean. Like, how can we evolve? How can we create different dynamics to adjust for what our employees expect? And I believe that frequency of communication, and then what I also alluded to earlier, leading with why. Why are we doing this from a mission and values perspective? Also, why are we just doing this from a fundamental perspective? Like, why is this the system that works? Gen Z is known to ask a lot of questions and to be a generation that very much wants to work smarter, not necessarily harder. And again, there are times when that comes off as really annoying. It's just like, just do it. Just do that and use the system that we already have. And there are times when that's appropriate, but there are also a lot of times that, let's take a look at this. Does this actually make sense? Or is it simply a business tradition we have in place because it's been in place?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I agree. And you know what? There should be no surprises. There should be no surprises when we go and do performance review time. It should be we've already talking about things throughout the whole time, which is really important. If I was to get you to get your crystal ball out now and think about the future, where do you see leadership being in 5 years?
Yeah, that's a really fun question. I'm going to continue on this, kind of use social media a little bit analogous, and I'm going to continue on that theme where I believe leadership will come really down to the idea of almost having one's followers in a community, like a social media account. There's something about social media. I'll use the example of YouTube, kind of YouTube sensations, YouTube stars, influencers. People don't feel like they're just following them. They feel like they're part of a community. And I think that's a really important distinction. And part of it is facilitated by these two-way channels. People can leave comments. People can like. People can share. There is ways to interact with that content. Going all the way back to our conversation around a traditional keynote is as one way as you can get. Someone goes up, they speak at a very passive audience, typically for 57 minutes in a row. And then they might, if they don't screw it up and don't leave time, which most of the time actually seems to happen, they might grab a question or two at the end. And that actually oftentimes for me brings a jolt of energy to the room. It's like, oh, this is a little bit unscripted. This could be interesting. But yes, I believe these channels of two-way communication, of high-touch communication, of building a following around what your organization is trying to achieve, I think these are best practice principles. Oh, and by the way, not to bury the lead, these people, these influencers, they're entertaining. They're inspiring. People want to watch their content. That's important. We have to grab people's attention. And so all of those things, I believe, are what are going to continue to make their way into the future of work in a traditional corporate setting. So yeah, it's truly as native to your new workforce as can be. And so this idea of it being a new kind of persona in the workforce,
yep,
that doesn't really seem to resonate with the emerging workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Luke, it's been awesome talking to you today. Hey, if our listeners are wanting to go and get in touch with you, where should they go?
I am very active on LinkedIn, so please reach out to me. I have an unusual last name, so I'm usually pretty easy to find there. And then I also have my website, lukegetting.com. That's GOETTING.com. We'll throw that in the show notes for everyone. Please do connect with me. Love to have these ongoing future work conversations. It's a lot of fun. And thank you so much for having me. It's been a real honor.
Oh, no, it's been great having you on as well. And thank you for sharing all your insights, wisdoms, and helping people understand a little bit more about how they can be inspiring and engaging for people. So it's been great. So thank you. There you go, listeners. Well, what are you going to do about things? Are you going to change the world by being an amazing communicator? Are you going to connect with authenticity? Are you going to communicate that way as well? And are you going to grab people's attention, or are you going to be a boring talking head up front? Well, it's totally up to you. You decide. Hey, thanks for joining us. Until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leadership is Changing with your host, Dennis Giannoutsos. Each week, we and our guests provide information and insights through exploring leading change, inspiring executives and leaders to adapt and lead a bigger game in a fast-moving world.